Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. Once again, I'm coming to you from my sumptuous balcony in Las Vegas, the Mission Control Central of the Business Creators Radio Show, where we help you discover your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. We are going to be covering financial intelligence today. We've been doing a series of episodes on this show about financing, about money issues, about money mindset. So this is going to be a very nice addition to this very popular track that we have going on right now. It's specifically about financial intelligence. And to guide us through this conversation, we have Henry Doss. Let me just tell you about him. He's a serial entrepreneur, business coach, screenwriter, and self-described ordinary guy, and now personal finance coach. He was born in Brooklyn at the tail end of the Eisenhower years, and he's lived his entire life in and around New York City. He has also lived his life in and around money as well, from cutting lawns as a kid to managing a stock portfolio as an adult. Now, he has more that he's going to share, more of the story. We're going to have him do it in his own words. Before that, I'm just going to tell you real quickly, his specialties include consultative advisory, strategic planning, startups, small business, coaching, mentoring, new business development, entrepreneurship, sales, marketing, product management, relationship building, and communications. And I deserve a $100,000 prize for not stuttering over that even once. Henry Doss, come on in. The weather's fine.
Thanks. How am I supposed to follow that intro there? That's a lot of keywords. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, just looking at your background, I'm curious how I'm even worthy to be here. And it's my show.
So stop. People are rolling their eyes like, who is this guy? So full of you know what?
Yeah.
I'm talking about me, not you.
Well, they've been rolling their eyes at me my whole life. All that means to me is they're paying attention. So
good on you.
So before we dive in, and you have some interesting things you want us to cover here, let's start by having you tell us a bit in your own words about your journey that's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
All right. So there's a, you know, there's a bit to unpack, but I'll just hit sort of the high point. So yeah, I started my first business 30 years ago as an entrepreneurial business. I started as a selling computers, basically in the early 90s. I specifically sold Apple computers way before there were Apple stores, back when you actually had to go to a reseller, an Apple authorized reseller. And then I've had a series of different businesses in the finance business, factoring business, real estate, home theater. You know, I start a business, I run it to its logical conclusion. Sometimes it means a sale. Sometimes it means just closing up shop because the world has changed. So that's been my really entrepreneurial, journey there. And then you can, parallel that with my financial journey. I bought my first stock when I was 17 years old. I was still in high school. I started putting money in my 401k when I was 22, when I got my very first job. And it's like, wait, you're going to match the money that I put in? Yeah, let's do that. I like that. Free money. And yeah, I've been doing that and managing my own finances all the way up to now, where I just a week ago turned 62. And so now I'm technically a senior. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey. It's been fun.
Yeah, now, yeah, well, that's the best part. It's far from over. A couple things from my end. You look like you started the same place I did, cutting lawns as a kid.
I was 12 years old, and I started cutting lawns, and then when I was 15, I got a job at a pancake house, a new pancake house that opened up in my town, and I got a job as a dishwasher at minimum wage, 1974. For the record, that was $2.20 an hour.
Wow.
And yeah, $2.20 an hour. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for at some point in your life, especially when you're young, working a minimum wage job. It gives you a profound respect for the millions of people who do that. Because a lot of them are really thankless tasks, but somebody has to do them.
Well, I started cutting grass when I was about the same age, and I grew up in a really rural area, which means I had three lawns available to me to cut as part of my big grass cutting business. And a couple years later, when I got really ambitious, I took my little red lawnmower and I pushed it a mile and a half up the road to the trailer park that was up there. And I picked up about five lawns up there as well. It was there's something about cutting grass. There's a major zen to it. I currently live in an apartment community, which is nice because when something breaks, it's a phone call rather than me having to do anything. And I love my beautiful balcony here, which has a sumptuous view of a really nice grove of, I don't know if they're palm trees. I think I got a pine tree right in front of me, actually. It's interesting. There's all kinds of different foliage. Everybody brought their own trees to Las Vegas when they sprung it out of the desert. The thing with this grass cutting business, however, I was limited geographically. When I turned 16, I couldn't wait to get a driver's license, not because I wanted to go out carousing, because I wanted to get a damn job and make some money. My first job was working in fast food, and I held that as a part-time job all the way through college. And in some ways, it taught me more than school did, candidly. Sure. Part of it was an appreciation for honest labor, a different appreciation, so to speak, for folks who aren't willing to do it. That's a different story. And I also discovered a lot about how logistics work in the real world. Not when you have the people in the sterile room with pie charts and flow charts, planning other people's days for them and coming up with these ridiculous ideas of how long a task should take in a fast-paced real-world environment, but actually being in the real-world environment, making this stuff work.
Yep.
And I take a contrarian view to this. My consulting work, for example, one of our clients was working with somebody to develop one of their events, and they had a meeting planner on board who wanted to meet with me to plot out a Gantt chart of exactly everything that my firm was going to be doing as part of this. So I'm saying this is going to be a 4-month process. And you want me to right now anticipate every real world variable that goes along with putting 100 people in a room in Boston. Okay, you draw the Gantt chart and I'll pretend to review it and tell you it's great. And then I'll just continue to do what I was going to do anyway. I mean, that's a contrarian view. Now, I'm not against planning. I'm not against having organization. I also believe that it's important to ask challenge questions about organization. In my book, I encourage entrepreneurs as they go through their day, as they perform tasks, as they oversee processes, as they do whatever they need to do to acquire, serve, and retain customers, whatever it is, to continually ask the question, what would happen if we didn't do this at all? What this does is it cuts out the nonsense so you can just skip the ridiculousness that gets piled on over the years. And it also amplifies the things that are in fact revenue, productivity, and momentum generators so that you can focus where you're going to get the fastest and largest return on investment.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I just did another podcast before this one where we were talking about my book, the FQ Financial Intelligence, and we were talking a lot about planning. But it was more from the point of view when we were talking about trade planning, right?
Okay.
We were talking about young investors, people going on Robinhood, everybody's, you know, trying to kill it and crypto and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but the reality is at some point in time, you need to be able to justify why you did what you did. And you really only have to justify it to yourself, right? I'm not the thought police, but if somebody, you know, somebody's asking me about a trade, and we were talking about a trade that he had missed the boat on. And I said, well, could you come up with a cogent justification for purchasing the stock? And the same thing with selling it, right? Why did you sell it? Right? What could you point to from an analytic? And it doesn't have to be more than just one sentence, right? That says the reason I did this was this. So what you're talking about in the business context is sort of like, if you can't give me a justification for doing what it is that we're doing, then why are we doing it? Right? Yeah. What was the purpose of doing a Gantt chart? I happen to love Gantt charts, and I've used them many, many times before.
Yeah.
But I'm with you, because if this has no correlation to doing the project, and if this is only a little piece of window dressing that you need to show to your higher ups to give them the illusion that shit be going down, great, you go do it. Because it's not germane to what it is that I need to do. It's not right. A tool that I use in order to fulfill my end of the bargain.
Right. So my view on it was, and this was nothing against the person who wanted me to participate in this. I think she's wonderful, actually. My view on it was, is this was attempting to anticipate every nanosecond of a process that by definition is chaotic and unpredictable. My job is to deal is with the chaos and unpredictability in real time. So I could spend hours with you to develop some chart that'll be irrelevant by the time you save the
final PDF. It'll be obsolete tomorrow.
Yeah.
So what's the point of us using it?
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in things from a statistical process control perspective, which is looking at how internal and external actors and actions impact our progress toward the goal, which is to fill that room. And yes, we did fill that room. It sold out.
Good.
Yeah. And most of them have even paid because you know how it is with conferences sometimes. Yeah. We're sold out. We sold all 100 seats and 93 of them were comps. No. In this case, it was more like 91 of them were full pay.
There you go.
So we did a good job. It's one of my crowning achievements, actually. And I played some good supporting role in it, something I'm very proud of.
Coach Speak, we call that a big win. You had a big
exactly.
win.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's swing back to you for a minute. We will get a lot more into this financial intelligence stuff. What do you consider your greatest accomplishment?
Raising my family is probably my greatest accomplishment.
Okay.
For me, I mean, you didn't put any qualifiers on it, so I put my own.
That's good.
Certainly, being able to build a financially stable life for my wife and myself and my three almost grown boys. Well, two of them are grown and one's in college. So that has been that's been a huge achievement. Anything business related kind of pales by comparison. I mean, it really just does because the family has such a greater weight for me. Certainly writing my book, which was one of those bucket list things that I wanted to do, and I never was quite sure when I was going to get to it. I was very proud of that. You know, took a lot of work, took a lot of effort, a lot of new things to learn, because it was the first time I had ever written a book. So now that I've done it, the next one will be a hell of a lot easier. And I'm proud of the businesses that we've done, people that we've been able to hire over the years. We've actually been able to provide livelihoods to other human beings. Very, very proud of that. So a lot of things to be grateful for.
Right. So let's get a bit into financial intelligence, the topic of our conversation today. First of all, define the term in your words. What is financial intelligence?
Well, people talk about financial literacy and literacy is literally the ability to read and write.
Yep.
But the ability to read and write doesn't really do anything for you if you're not reading anything and you're not writing anything. Right?
Right.
I mean, so the idea of financial intelligence is taking the information, the data, that the world is giving you and creating original thought with it. You shared that I'm a screenwriter, right? My wife for years and years has made fun of me or teased me because I have a head full of what she calls useless information, right? But the thing is, it's not useless information. It's raw material that I've used to create original thought. I've written 11 screenplays, and many, many parts of those screenplays came out of those so-called useless facts that my wife derided, right? That's the raw material that you need to create original thought. Financial intelligence is the same thing, right? You need to look at the first chapter of my book is called The Psychology of Money, right? That is going to set the sort of the boundaries and the imprint for all of the decisions that you make throughout your entire life. You are never going to get a day off from money. You know, if you're Jeff Bezos and you've got more money than any reasonable person could ever spend in 1,000 lifetimes, maybe you get to take a day off or two about money. But for most normal people, you're going to be grinding this out for your entire adult life. And you're going to make a lot of decisions. You're going to need data, and you're going to need to apply it intelligently, I think, if you want to be successful. Make sense?
I think it makes dollars and cents. And you know, you mentioned Jeff Bezos. I think you look at people like him, and you also look at Elon Musk. And I'm going to bring up those two names because they take turns being the wealthiest man in the world, depending on what day it is, what time of day it is, and what sarcastic sarcastic remark Elon made about what cryptocurrency on some off-the-cuff tweet or interview or something like that, that sent the markets just soaring or reeling. It's just hilarious in my personal view. But what's funny about it is, you know, in a way that's actually very serious, is what these guys do shows to me that they actually do think about money all the time. Jeff Bezos did not get from having that little wooden desk in that corner of that warehouse with the Amazon logo printed out on 8.5 by 11 on an inkjet to being who he is today by not thinking about money. And Elon Musk didn't go through PayPal and launching a car into space and everything else by just sort of winging it.
They had a plan. They had benefactors. They had capital. They took risk. What's interesting is you can even see the imprint, because I've been to Amazon's offices and I've been to Google's offices. And what's interesting is Google is like Disneyland, you know, with snack stations and little razor scooters so you can get from one end of the building to the other. And Amazon is very austere and very buttoned down.
Interesting.
I think it's a direct reflection of the corporate culture. And I believe the corporate culture comes from the top. People at the top are the ones who really set that. Just even with large businesses. I believe that fully. So yes, they have enormous financial intelligence. They had to have in order to accumulate the vast riches that they've had. But they've also had their, you know, butts hanging out in the breeze every once in a while, right? This wasn't all, you know, moonbeams and puppy dogs for them. There were, you know, significant risks, especially more Musk, I think, than for Amazon. Significant risks that go with it. But I bet you if you asked them, they would tell you that they wouldn't want it any other way.
You know, here are a couple analogies I like to bring up when it comes to this whole thing with financial intelligent decision making and needing to come up with a justification or a reason why you did something in one or two sentences. The reality of business today is, as business creators and entrepreneurs, we're called upon to make wide-ranging decisions with very limited data on an unbelievably, sometimes basically non-existent timeline. Mm-hmm. So what I like to remind people is, hey, remember during the Civil War when on the very first day Ulysses S. Grant was appointed commander and he won every battle? Okay, it didn't quite go that way. And do you also remember World War II, where on September 1st, 1939, Dwight D. Eisenhower was appointed Supreme Commander, and all he did was win all the battles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And no, on September 1st, 1939, Dwight D. Eisenhower was a lieutenant colonel stationed in some base, I think, in the Midwest somewhere, doing paperwork, basically. The mm-hmm. story of him progressing from that to becoming Supreme Commander 4 years later is in itself a novel.
Oh, no doubt. Well, that's
I bring these up to illustrate that in just these two great events of our time, it didn't go by some pre-planned trajectory, and there was a lot of building the airplane while you were flying it involved.
Oh, no question about it. I often say that the shortest distance from point A to point D is to point B is not a straight line. It's actually the path of least resistance, right? And the path of least resistance can be quite serpentine, quite meandering.
Oh yeah.
A lot of highways, byways, a lot of pivots. But I also operate under the philosophy that, look, I'm going to try to make the best decision I can make with the data that's available to me at that time, right? That's the best that I can do. In most cases, I can go back and Monday morning quarterback it all I want, but often that's a case of adding in information that I didn't have at the time, right? So it's easy to go back and second guess, but you want to be able to now take all that and learn from the experience so that you can raise your intelligence, right?
Right.
Because the world is constantly shifting and pivoting and changing around you. I had this debate with somebody when we were on vacation who used the famous Einsteinian phrase about insanity is, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Right.
And I said, Einstein would laugh at you if you attributed that to him, because he would never say something that's just so sort of lame-brained. All right. Sometimes you have to stick to your guns that the world hasn't caught up to you, right? It just hasn't. And if you just decided that, oh, I'm not changing my approach and I'm failing, well, what are you gonna do? You may pull the plug. You may really be onto something that's really revolutionary, but the problem is the world wasn't ready for it. And then when the world catches up, all of a sudden you're the early adopter, you're the fair-haired child. So, intelligence takes on all different forms, but it starts with data. You've got to take in some data in order to make your decisions. And that data is going to be imperfect. And it may not be timely. It may be old.
Right.
And then you've got to build a process around that. And it needs to be a replicatable process. And then you've got to learn every time you execute it. So if you're a trader, right? I was just talking about this, you know, an hour ago. Got to journal your trades. Got to come up with justifications. Got to say, what did I do right and what did I do wrong? So that I can now apply those techniques and build an intelligent framework to make your life easier. Because when you first start in managing and investing your own money, it's like rocket science. It's tough. It's hard.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff to learn. And then the game will start to slow down. Does it mean you're not going to take some bad beats along the way? You're going to. You're going to take some lumps. That's okay. As long as you have the commitment to stay the course, you'll be fine.
I gained some of this mindset by playing Texas Hold'em. It's one of my avocations.
I was actually just thinking of poker.
Yeah.
Poker and golf. It's like
poker and golf. Yes.
Poker and golf. Yes. You are going to take, because I use the term bad beat, right? That's a poker term, right? But what you see happening with people is they go on tilt, right? I see that a lot with people with money mistakes. They double down because they get triggered by something. They do a trade, it goes against them. They read some stupid Reddit thing. They don't do any homework. They say, I'll put my bunch of money into this stuff. And then it blows up in their face because they were the last one at the dance. And then they go on tilt and say, I just lost this money. Well, now I got to get even more aggressive and shed even more risk because I got to make that money back. And then before you know it, they're broke. Right. Same thing on the poker table. Right.
Yep. Yep. And yeah, when you play poker, sometimes you will take some bad beats. I have two real quick examples. Just a couple weeks ago, I turned up a king high straight at the turn.
Wow.
And on the river, somebody caught a seven high flush.
Wow.
And one of the other players decided that they were going to call me a donkey and a bingo player because I went all in on that straight. Well, I was reading the table and all I saw was a bunch of checks. So I saw people limping in, seeing if anything was going to happen. I caught something. I pushed on it. Somebody else got lucky. Now, to call somebody names because they made that decision, I stand by my decision 100%. In that same situation, I would have done the exact same thing. And you know, the best thing is the more you play that game, the more you have the opportunity to be that person that catches the seven high flush when somebody had a king high straight.
Yeah, it's, you know, you look at it from an arithmetic standpoint, and you'd say to yourself, what were the odds? And I bet you the odds were probably pretty low that he was going to catch that.
Oh, yeah.
That
particular, yeah. And so you have to think about it. What are some things you're going to catch against the odds? Because I've had similar catches where I turned up something on the river that was just even surprised me.
Sure. Yeah, there's no question. And money is not dissimilar from that. There are going to be times where you're going to do everything right and it's all going to go horribly wrong. It happens.
It does happen. Yeah, the other case I have is I was playing in a tournament with 20 people. At the first table I was at, I got to a point where I was really badly short stacked and it was really just a matter of time. So it got to the point where I went all in blind. Didn't even look at my card, just pushed all in. The reason being is some of the other people who had gotten knocked out early were talking about starting a second game and I wanted to get in on it. I just wanted to get out. I didn't declare this, but I was hoping somebody would just take me out so I could get out of that game.
Mm-hmm.
So the cards turn up and then after we get to the river, I look at my whole cards. I caught a full house, sevens full of fours.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's called dumb luck.
And one of the other players that followed me, I'm told, was talking with other people about finding me later and beating me up. No, they were serious about it. Like they were actually going to do it. And they told other people they were going to do it. And all I could think is, you're the dumb idiot that followed me when I made a stupid move.
Yeah.
You know, you can take a few lessons from that. The first is you may get to a place where you don't have much to lose anyway. So if we're talking about odds and numbers, just give it a blind chance to work for you. As long as you're not going to sacrifice your house in the process is the first item. And the second thing is just because somebody else jumps off a bridge doesn't mean you have to. They could have all just sat on their cards and kept me stuck in that game short stacked. But somebody decided to think, oh, look at this moron. He's going all in without looking at his cards. Oh, I'll beat him. Yeah. Okay. Which is why you got to be careful about your financial intelligence, because you see somebody else doing something wild like that. It doesn't necessarily mean that they know something you don't. It could just be that they're just pushing all in just to see what happens.
Just make sure nobody's, you know, carrying a pistol in their belt when you do something silly like that. Right. I mean, yeah, people have died for less. I hate to say it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the whole thing blows my mind to this day. And it was almost 20 years ago. I'm thinking, you know what? I've caught some bad beats and I've administered a few, too. It's just the nature of the game. And the more you play, the more you win and the more you lose every once in a while.
Right. But what happens with people is they'll take that bad beat and then they'll never play again.
No. If I take a bad beat, I look at what I can learn from it.
Oh yeah. I'm with you 100%, but I've talked to people who've invested in the market and they're like, you know what? I blew up my whole account. I'm never going to do that again. And my answer is, well, you know, you were completely unprepared. It would be like you went up on a plane to go skydiving and you just didn't have a parachute, right?
Yeah.
Well, you get one opportunity to do that. How about being a little bit more prepared next time? But they want shortcuts.
Sure.
They want to be able to read it in a book. They want to be able to do it on a Reddit channel or listen to a bunch of guys on some talking head TV show who says you should go long this or you should go blah that. They don't have any skin in the game. In fact, almost all of those guys are prohibited from actually materially participating. The old, Dan Dorfman rule, right? That you can't materially participate in stocks that you're talking about. You can't do an old fashioned pump and dump.
Right.
So you've got no skin in the game. I would prefer it better if you had skin in the game. So at least you're at risk and I'm at risk. Because if I'm going to follow the donkey, I want to know the donkey's got some money behind it. Not just telling me a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I go do it and it blows up. And they're like, well, I didn't do it.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah. Out. Remember in that scenario I told you I didn't look at my whole card. So if I'd have caught pocket aces and I wasn't managing my tells very well, there was no tell for them to pick up on that I had something in the hole. Because even I didn't know. So when I look at this random online speculation, I think, are these people who are going all in with garbage? What is it that they know that I don't? And do they really know anything? I mean, I have a little crypto. I have a few stocks here and there. I'm working my way into it and the way I'm doing it. And this is one of the reasons I'm so excited that you wanted to join us here at Business Creators Radio is I'm developing my financial intelligence as I go by playing in the real world. A friend of mine who's actually done very well with this with no formal training told me that his strategy for success is he uses a baseball analogy. It's all about hitting singles.
Yeah.
He's not even trying for the home run. He just wants to keep hitting singles, keep putting one point on the board at a time. And looking at his portfolio, it's not a bad strategy.
It's an excellent strategy. And it's not a surprise that your friend is doing well because that's really what you want to do. Now, if you follow baseball, and I've followed baseball since I was a kid, and I collect baseball cards back from way back in the day, which have gone parabolic price wise. They played a different version of the game back then, right? They hit and run, they stole bases. They were very creative about how they manufactured their runs. They weren't afraid to, hit the ball the other way and move runners around just to scratch out a run here or there. That's how the great teams. But now you look at the game, and I think it was last year or the last couple of years of the first time in history where there have been, I don't even know what the numbers are, more strikeouts than hits, I think it is.
Yeah.
And more home runs than anything else. It is a feast or famine game, and it's kind of parallels a lot of the thinking, generational thinking. Being an old school boomer, we understand, bunts and sacrifices and singles and hit and runs and steals and all that stuff.
Yeah.
This new game is not that. It's the whole point is to get up, swing as hard as you can, and try to knock the ball out of the park. And if you don't, you're going to end up striking out. And that's boring, right? That's boring. I want my trading to be boring, but what's boring in trading is a bunch of little singles, little teeny profits, right? And I've told people, and I say it in my book, I'm saying, if your trading is exciting, then you are doing something wrong. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah. I can tell you it's something really boring. I have a friend of mine who created a vanity crypto coin on rally.io. So, he's a buddy of mine. So I'm thinking, all right, I'll throw in $50. My worst case scenario is I got to wait for an extra $50 to go out for a meal. Big freaking deal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For the past few months, the value of my holdings off that $50 has been between $650 and $775 just with fluctuations.
Okay.
So I keep saying, you know, I'm going to get out of it. I'm going to cash out. I'm going to get out of it. I'm going to cash out. I'm going to wait till it zooms up again to a certain level, or if it drops below a certain thing, I'm going to walk. But, you know, the reality is I'm just going to let it ride. I mean, if it turns into like a million, then yeah, that's where you get the hell out and you count your blessings in life. But my worst case scenario here is I never see that $50 again. And I'm nowhere near that. In fact, I'm over 10 to 1 above that. That's about as exciting as watching dry paint. Not even watching paint dry, but watching dry paint. But what I know is that for $50, I've turned it into somewhere between 11 to 1 to 13 to 1. And it's something where I could push a button at any time and get myself a small windfall. Or I could ride it out and see what happens. There's no excitement about that. And you probably even notice in my tonality, the way I'm describing it, it's like, oh, ho-hum. But the fact is, if I could use my financial intelligence to replicate that 100 times, now we're talking real money.
So the question that arises to me is, when will you know, right? So you took a $50 investment.
And I was doing it as a favor for a buddy. Let's add that in too.
I don't care if you were doing it for the Queen of England. I mean, no disrespect when I say that. I don't care about your motives. I don't really care. I'm only talking about it purely unemotionally. You made a $50 investment. It's now gone 13x.
Yes.
Right. So now you say to yourself, okay, what am I going to do with this? When do I know when I have to get out? Is it next Thursday, or is it when I turn 87 years old, or is it some event in between there that tells me now's time maybe to take some of the money off the table, or maybe to take all the money off the table, right?
All right.
What is that event?
Okay, this is basically off the top, and is subject to change at any time based on subsequent learning or inspiration I discover along the way. So I want to qualify with that. Mm-hmm. But in one sentence, if this thing hits $10,000, I'm out.
Good. Now, having said that, would you put an automatic execution order in that says when it hits 10,000, it sells you out?
This particular technology doesn't have automatic execution offers, but based on where I am right now, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. How low would it have to go for you to get out? Or is there, it's 50 bucks is powder. I don't care. If it goes to zero, no big deal.
I don't care. Mm-hmm. The $50 is emotionally, I'm divorced from it. The moment I put it in, I separate myself from it emotionally. I considered it gone.
So you're willing to lose $650 on this trade?
Yeah. Okay. Without a second thought.
Good. So as long as you know that, then you have a plan.
Yeah.
Right?
Because the way I look at it, the biggest loss I can make here is $50. That's my biggest loss. I saw this, and I'm going to paraphrase this.
Well, actually, your biggest loss is $650. Because whether you care to admit it or not, that's now your money.
Okay, I see your point. I see your point.
Your principal means nothing. There's no house money, right? You live in Vegas, right? You say, right. Oh, I'm playing with the house's money. Bullshit.
No, there's no house money. There's no house money. I can tell you. Living in Vegas, I can tell you that. Yeah.
Yeah, there ain't no house money. So you're willing to lose $650, but the upside is 10 grand. That's pretty good. It's a nice ROI.
Yeah, I've done some research into these vanity coins, and I've seen how some of these things can perform. And I've looked at fluctuations, and I've looked at how current political, economic, and other situations have raised interest in new economies and alternative currency. So I believe that this is a rocket that hasn't even taken off yet. So I'm happy to sit on it.
Good. Yeah, there's again, my point for, and again, this is just one little part of of financial intelligence, which is just having the ability to justify, put some thought into the decisions you're making, and living with them, and not kicking yourself in the head if something changes down the road. You know, again, we're back to the idea of making the best possible decision I can with the data that's available at this moment in time.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Right. And that's good. And that's the sort of thing that I advocate for people, which is that they do that. Right. But just don't tell me that you saw it on Reddit and you decided that, you know, I want to, you know, get me some of that. Right.
Right.
No, that doesn't work.
Right. Right. The whole GameStop thing from earlier this year. I mean, that was a fluke, in my opinion.
I have a friend.
Yeah.
Who lives out in Wyoming, and he's a trader, and we're on mastermind groups together. A young guy, and he's in the real estate business. And he did a couple of trades. He did a long trade and he did an options trade back in October, way before this whole Reddit thing came up, on GameStop. And so I asked him about it, and he gave me a very nice little cogent explanation for why he put the trade on. And he made a boatload of money on it. And in fact, the day that he sent me that stuff, I said, dude, I looked at the thing, get the F out of there now. And this was weeks and weeks and weeks ago. And he did. He booked his profit and went on his way and, you know, is trading other stuff right now. Did he leave some money on the table? Who cares? It was a really, really good trade. Well thought out, well executed. I just found it very interesting that he didn't actually take the money off the table until I looked at it and said, dude, run for the hills, because this is super risky. Right. Well, I mean, there was more to it than that. His options were going to expire. Right.
Yeah.
So you know how options work, and three out of four options expire worthless. So you don't want to squeeze that thing for the last nickel, because something hiccups and you're getting close to expiration and all of a sudden your profit goes bye bye. So the profit was really good that day. And I said, wow, book that. And when I come out to Cheyenne and visit you, you can take me to dinner, which is exactly what I'm going to do in a couple of weeks.
Nice.
Yeah. So we don't cry over spilled milk. People say, oh, I got out so early. I shouldn't have sold this or this and that and the other thing. And I said, did you make money? And they said, yes. And I said, well, stop whining about it. Right. Because I don't care. You made money. Right. You must have had a reason to get out.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, the thing is, we were dealing with, I mentioned earlier, my involvement with the process by definition was chaotic and unpredictable. That's what you're dealing with the marketplace. Anything could come in. I mean, if you go back to, say, January 2020, how many people were saying, put all your stuff in Zoom?
Oh, yeah.
Not a lot that I remember.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, Zoom, I've been using Zoom for 10 years because I use it for my coaching business and everything else. And it was this, you know, sleepy little thing. And then what happened after their thing went parabolic? There was a Zoom bombing. And then all of a sudden, one day I go on Zoom and my personal room is now locked down and people can't get into my weekly Zoom call. And I'm like, what'd they do? Oh, they just proactively locked it down in order to stop that. What did the stock do? Well, it took a 20-point hit. Right now, all of a sudden, hey, welcome to volatility world. You're a grown-up now, Zoom. You're not some sleepy little stock. You're now on people's radar. And everybody piled into it. Everybody put it on their watch list. Everybody thought they were so super smart because Zoom was going to take over the world. I don't know how many of those people actually looked and saw what their earnings were or anything else that went along with it. I didn't.
Right.
It wasn't anything that I had an interest in. There's thousands and thousands of stocks. It wasn't on my radar and I didn't feel the need to put it on my radar, but other people did and they made money.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah. So Henry, you refer to something you call the biggest money trap. Have we already discussed it, or is there something else we need to know?
The biggest money trap. Well, you know what? It's going to depend on who you are. Going back to chapter one of The Psychology of Money. What is your particular individual biggest money trap? We've already talked about a couple of them right here. Being unprepared or hanging on for the last eighth or otherwise just doing stupid stuff with your money. And then there's the opposite side of it, which is, well, you know what? I'm going to avoid all of this nonsense and I'm just going to stuff my money in the mattress, right? I'll take all the risk out of money by simply not doing anything, right? And there are, and believe me, there are people who do that. They do. And, you know, on the one hand, you have to say, well, I'm proud of you because you understand your, you know, you're clued into your personal tendencies. So yeah, that's a good thing. But on the other side of it, zero risk means zero reward.
Yeah.
And you're just, and now talk about leaving money on the table. There's a way that you can do this and still sleep at night, you know, instead of worrying that your principal is going to go away. That's why I look at Bitcoin and I say, this trades 168 hours a week, right? I can't invest in something that never stops trading because I have to sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to, and I'm not going to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and think, oh my God, I better see if Bitcoin had a waterfall decline because of something that went on in Asia while I was trying to catch some winks.
Right.
Sorry. I'm not going to do that. The New York Stock Exchange is open 32 and a half hours out of 168 in a week. That's good enough for me.
When bell rings, you know, you don't have to think about it till the next morning.
49 minutes ago, it rang on Friday, July 16th. I don't have to really worry about it until Monday morning at 9:30.
Exactly.
I can go do what I want to do. I can actually go do some homework and look for some stocks that I might want to buy or sell over the weekend while the market is closed. That's a godsend.
All right. Tell us more about that. Why? Because I think this is something that goes into financial intelligence. What should the mindset or the mind process be for doing buys and sells while the market is closed? I'm actually curious about this.
I'll go back to the golf analogy, right? Because I'm a golfer.
Right.
The time to institute changes to your game is not when you're in the middle of the round. Right. When you show up at the golf course, you go to the range to warm up. Right. That's just there to warm up and then to play the round. Right.
Right.
You're going to play the round with the game that you brought that day. Some days you bring a good game and you're killing it. Other days, it's just a train wreck. It's just the nature of how that works. And you live and die with that. But when you're not on the course and you're at the driving range and you're working on things, well, that's when you get to work on things. Uh-huh. That's when you get to experiment and work and practice things. I've been instituting a few little swing changes and they haven't really taken hold. So I'm kind of spraying the ball around, but that's okay because I'm, you know, kind of in the middle of making some adjustments. It's not going to be perfect. I'm going to still go out and enjoy the game, but where I'm working on things is when I'm not on the course. And so it's a lot less stressful. Perhaps you're a bit more level-headed when you're doing all of this analysis while the markets are closed.
Uh-huh.
Right? You can't impulse trade if the market's not open, and impulse trading will kill your account. So you may be working on a Saturday afternoon, looking at some watch lists, and you may detect, oh my God, there's a really good trade in this stock. But you can't trade it just then. It's got to marry until Monday morning.
Oh, I see your office manager is chiming in now.
Yes, my dog Elvis is in the building.
What kind of dog?
He's a mutt. He's a rescue dog that we rescued from being euthanized.
He's
a 5-year-old. He's a 5-year-old, like mostly black lab. He's adorable. He's about 80 pounds and he's, we moved up here to rural Connecticut. So we're on 5 acres now. So he's got mange. He's a mangy dog.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know where the term mangy dog came from, but mange is like a disease with these little mites.
Yeah.
And then we took him to the doctor and they said, well, he was, you know, rooting, must have been rooting with a dead animal carcass because that's how he got it. It's like, and I mean, kids are yelling at me like, you've got to put an invisible fence. I'm like, I'm not putting an invisible fence around 5 acres. How am I going to do that?
Right.
He's a dog. He's going to run around. The only thing I worry about here is that this is, we have bear here. So this morning, and I've actually had to chase bears away, but there was a, my wife saw the, there's a, like an adolescent black bear. She saw him this morning walking up our road. We live on a dirt road, just walking on our road, sort of sniffing everything around. I don't want him to confront a bear because I think that would end really badly for Elvis.
We as humans know that in at least many of the situations, encountering a bear is really not a big deal, but a dog does not have that level of critical thinking,
self-awareness to know how to communicate with a bear.
He's a complete alpha dog. You don't want to get alpha with a bear there. I mean, it's actually as I said, in many situations it's actually very easy to get the bear to just turn around and walk away, but you don't do that by howling like he does.
No, I caught one in my garbage about 2 weeks ago as I was putting the garbage out on like Thursday morning. I caught him red pawed. He had a bag of he knocked the garbage can over. He had a bag of garbage in his mouth. You know, we locked eyes as I was came around the corner of my house, and I just screamed at him. I started yelling and he ran away, and then he hid because he was waiting for me to leave because he found the mother load of garbage there. And then I just started banging stuff. I mean, it was pretty funny. I was laughing, and it was like, you know, you can't let them get comfortable with people. They're adorable, but for their own good. You don't want them to turn into nuisance bears, because nuisance bears get shot, and I don't want to see the bears get shot.
No.
We're just sharing a planet with them. That's all we're doing.
This is what I'm getting at. As humans, we know that if you want to get a bear to turn around and run, your most likely strategy to make that succeed is to make yourself look big and loud.
I just yelled at him.
Yeah. While standing still. Mm-hmm. But if you charge the bear, they go into fight or flight and they probably will not run.
They will stand their ground. Depend. Now, this was an adolescent bear. I've seen the mama bear. The mama bear is huge because the mama bear got in my garbage. And she's taller than I am.
So I'm playing with firecrackers there. You're interacting with the kids and the mama. Woo.
I'm not messing with mama bear. Although I saw mama bear on the road and she ran away from me. But yeah, that's exactly right. Just scare them off. I saw some picture on the internet where people were sitting at a picnic table and there was a bear sitting with them. It's like, no, you can't do that. I know you might think that that's cool. It's not. Get them, you know, chase them off, make them afraid of you. It's for their own good. So anyway, that's Elvis' story.
Well, yeah. Conservation of bears goes along with conservation of wildlife, where part of the reason that they're able to expand the bear population is because they're expanding the forest. That's where the bears are supposed to live.
We're actually doing a very good job in concert. You know, there are all sorts of different species that are coming back, and that's a wonderful thing because it's just one planet that we're all sharing together. But you still have to be, you know, conscientious about it. I just put a bat house up on the side of the house because, you know, the bats are good for the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Right. Even though people go, you know, crazy with bats, I'm like, no, I'm going to put another one up there because the bats eat the bugs, and the bats are good for kind of the whole environment. They're not, you know, they're not scary. They're ugly, but that's not their fault. That's just the way they're made.
Well, possums, groundhogs, all these animals actually play a role.
Yeah, they do.
One of the most frightful things I remember from my childhood is when a groundhog came onto the property and somebody killed it.
Oh,
thinking why, what this groundhog is doing for us, and I knew this at the time, is when they dig their burrows, which they can dig out hundreds of pounds of dirt, just one groundhog can be responsible for hundreds of pounds of dirt. What that's doing is surfacing rich soil. Farmers rely on groundhogs to help them protect their crops. Here's the reason why. Some of the predators of their crops include things like rabbits, foxes, etc.
Yep.
The rabbits and foxes will go down into burrows and leave the crops alone.
Sure.
Because when that groundhog leaves their burrow, it doesn't just fill itself in. Somebody else can set up residence.
Now, there's a nice little corollary there, because in the financial world,
That's why we're having this conversation about wildlife, because I knew that the final word on this interview would link into that. So take it away, Henry.
So think about it. Think about all the newbies who are investing and doing all this dumb trading, right? So what are they providing for the financial ecosystem? Well, what they're really providing is a lot of liquidity.
Yeah.
And that liquidity is good. And, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but it's the truth. The pros are going to eat their lunch. They're going to take their money away from them, right? They just are. So if you're a professional trader, you want as many dumb newbies in the system as is possible.
Yeah.
And if you're a short trader, you really want as many dumb newbies in it as possible. Because when we have another waterfall decline, and all of them, and I'm not predicting it here on July 16th, but yeah. I'm very, very leery of the frothiness of the market. It's a good time to take profits. It's always a good time to take profits. I say take profits when they present themselves. But if you got profits, now's not a bad time to take them. I see the market as being very frothy. Now, a year from now, could we have the same conversation and still be frothy? Sure. But I would expect to see some corrections, right?
Right.
And if they're violent corrections, what will the newbies do? You know, they'll panic. It's just like back to being at the poker table. I know we're mixing all of our metaphors.
Yep.
But what does the inexperienced player do when things start to get hot on the poker table? You know, they're going to fold, or they're going to do some stupid bully bet where they think that they're going to take a pro out by pushing all their chips to the center, not realizing that the guy across the table's got the nuts. And yeah. he had it at the flop. Right. And he baited you because you're a newbie and you don't know any better.
That's one of the lessons I learned from bad beats. Sometimes if you got the nuts on the flop, just ride it out. Let somebody lure you in and then push on them.
Sure. If I
got that ace high flush and the stuff on the table is not connected, which means it's unlikely there's a full house creeping up on me, I'll just wait it out and then I'll push.
You got to know the table you're playing on, because conversely, there may be times where when you get the nuts on the flop, you say, I'm not going to take any chances that something else is going to happen to me when the turn and the river come out. I'm going to blow everybody out now.
Yeah,
I'm going to push now and blow everybody out of the market. And sure, I would have made a lot more money if I'd ridden it out, but I also would have increased my risk. Instead, I'm taking the dumb money right off the table, yep. The boring money right now, and we're going to move on.
Right, right.
This is intelligence.
Exactly.
Poker intelligence,
yep.
Nature intelligence, and financial intelligence are all in the same genus, different
yep.
species.
That's right, and it's reading the table. As I said earlier, when I had that straight, I was looking around the table and all I saw were a bunch of checks.
Yeah.
And I was also looking at how quickly they moved and what their faces looked like, because those are tells.
Sure they are. If
you see people moving slow, that could mean that they think they're close to something and watch out. It could also mean something else. I mean, that which raises the whole point that it really just involves, like, poker, golf, and finances, just being intelligent. So we're at the top of the hour here, and I know you have a little gift for us, so tell us about it.
You can go to something that I offer to listeners. Yep. Is a month of free coaching. So if you go to podcast.dosknowledge.com,
okay,
and you can sign up for a month of free coaching, 4 half-hour sessions. We could talk about money. We could talk about entrepreneurship. We could talk about screenplays. We could talk about poker even. I know enough to be dangerous.
All right.
Whatever it is. And I've had a bunch of people who have taken advantage of that. It's my little gift to the podcast audience. It's also an opportunity to sort of gauge, you know, who's listening and who's interacting. And if you want to download my book, You can go to henrydaas.com, which is my personal website, HENRYDAAS, or DASS. If you misspell it, you can still get there. And right there on the front page, you can get a link to download my book for free, FQ Financial Intelligence.
Fantastic.
So those are my little freebies for your audience. I'm happy to do it. I've done probably close to 100 podcasts since the lockdown. I like doing them. They're fun. I like having great conversations like this. And I hope people enjoyed it.
All right. Well, Henry Doss, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor. And believe me, an education.
Good. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Adam.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.